Hi, I'm Ryan LaPlante, and I'm one of the crazy founders of Dumb Dumbs and Dice, the production company that's made the video you're watching or the podcast you're listening to right now. Now, we're clearly busy. We're producing 5 weekly podcasts: Dumb Dumbs and Dragons, Blood and Syrup, The Mythos Mysteries, Warhammer 40,000, The Valentine Heresy, and Curse Code and Crown, as well as 3 event podcasts with mini-series releases scheduled at random intervals: Dumb Scum and Villainy, One Shots, and the bad movie review show, Garbage Town the Movie Podcast. But we want to take this time to invite you to become a part of our company and a part of our Patreon at patreon.com/dumbdumbdice. You can get access to our Discord, access to exclusive DM and character chats. You can get the chance to name characters in our shows. You can even become a recurring NPC and hear yourself interacting with our characters each week through the voice of Tom. You can become a patron for as little as $1, and there's great value for you at even that level. So please join the Dumb Dumbs and Dice family and help us make even more content in a way that you are guaranteed to love. That's patreon.com/dumbdumbdice. DUMBDUMBDICE. So let's do something dumb together, and thanks for being part of our stories.
I am Executron, god of merchandising, and I came into existence because Dumb Dumbs and Dice has its own merchandise. That's a god pun. Get it? Dice? Merchandise? Anyways, you can get t-shirts, hoodies, spiral notebooks, clocks, wall art, throw pillows, bags, and even stickers emblazoned with your favorite Dumb Dumbs and Dice characters and their catchphrases. Go to redbubble.com/people/dumbdumbdice. That's D-U-M-B. D-U-M-B-D-I-C-E. One more time for the mortals in the back. redbubble.com/people/dumbdumbdice. Get your merchandise today.
Welcome back to Dumb Dumbs and Dragons, where improvisers who've never role-played before journey into the world of Dungeons and Dragons. I am the Grand Wizard Bukake, your host. Yee-haw! Our heroes are in Wild West Faerun. Butthole was determined not to be put in a cell. Sheriff Quinny was horrified by the fact his prisoner might not be Red Reggie. And Moss found out Tombslab has only 3 days left before they're invaded. Can our heroes battle the Tingly Boys without any ammo? Find out next on Dumb Dumbs and Dragons.
In 3 days, the town of Tombslab will burn. This is the promise of Angel Eyes Archie Tingler of the Tingle Boys. And a promise from Archie, a bandit truly in the mold of the God of War himself, is a promise worth heeding. Having found the severed hand of Leanna Cattleshield along with the threat and the general store ransacked, most notably of food, meaning that the town is now drastically under food supplied as well. Yeah. Moss, you find yourself having to report back to Quinny and Butthole about the state of things. As word begins to spread throughout the town, it becomes apparent that there were a few break-ins. Of course, unbeknownst to most of the people in town, a break-in at Shooty McGillicuddy's Pew Pew Emporium isn't actually that big a deal, because the town has been waiting for a resupply on ammo for a while. Luckily, the sheriff's department has some ammunition, but ammunition in the way that people who rarely need to shoot anyone need ammunition, not ammunition in a defend the town against a bandit assault kind of way. Moss, you arrive back at the sheriff's office and find Quinny kind of 1,000 yards staring at his desk and Butthole calmly petting Goblin Jr. It's your duty to inform them of what you've discovered.
Well, Sheriff, I'm glad that y'all have worked out your differences, because we've got a problem on our hands.
We sure do. What's the problem?
We've got the Tingly Boys coming to burn this place down in 3 days. And we've got a missing Leanna Cattleshield. Well, I mean, her hand's here, but the rest of her's missing.
Well, that's great. Any
sorry, that's great. What?
Yeah, Moss, that's super. Let's see here. So anyone else missing or parts of them?
Not that we know of.
All right. And how do we know that the gang is coming to burn the town to the ground?
Well, they left a note. Days.
They left a note.
Moss, I think it's safe to say you brought the note.
Yeah. I mean, this note.
Oh, wow. This is going to be great.
And here's the hand.
Okay, the hand I'm less okay with. We got to save her. But, like, we wanted to kill Archibald anyways, and that's worth, like, 1,000 gold, right?
Yeah. Why are they trying to scare us out of town? We're nobody. We're nothing. Do they know that we're... Did anyone break into McGillicuddy's?
Yeah, absolutely. Place is ransacked.
Well, they should know we don't have no bullets. Why are they giving us 3 days? That's weird.
Anything to do with the railroad?
Maybe.
Wait, we don't have bullets?
As well. No, no.
Okay, well, do you have enough swords or axes or shields? Like, we could just stage it out. I had to fight some laser guns with just, like, a hammer once.
I mean, we do have some hammers and some saws.
Do we have swords and shields? Is that a thing?
No. It is a thing in this world. You just don't have them.
Yeah.
The typical armaments, just for reference, following the traditional rules of a Western, not that long ago, Old West Faerun was torn apart by a civil war. And as a result, there are still munitions and tools of that that great conflict around. So think more like cavalry sabers, that sort of thing, like Bowie knives. There are definitely weapons from earlier times that do still exist, but generally speaking, people are more armed with modern weapons.
Right. Modern, okay.
Quote weapons.
So you're all like gun people then, right?
Yeah. Me and the deputies are basically the only ones with ammunition left.
Okay. Yeah. I'm assuming we want to defend the town, right? Everybody's on team defend the town.
I mean, I would rather not have this come to a confrontation if we can help it. I mean, I don't know if there's any way to stop them from coming here at all.
See, I was worried Moss was going to be different here than back where I'm from. But Moss back where I'm from is always like, what if we talk it out with the murderous psychopaths? So this is like totally on par.
I'm sorry, the Moss, you know, a different Moss.
Oh, you weren't here for this. So again, I mean, I keep repeating.
I mean,
this
you
story.
Were babbling earlier about other dimensions, but like,
yeah. So this time, listen real close, and he'll just do the same kind of speech again, but now coherently about other dimensions and how he's got a Quinny tattoo, but there's a Quinny and all this kind of stuff.
Moss, can you roll me an insight check, please?
Yeah. Goddamn wisdom, 4.
He seems like he. At the very least, he believes what he's saying. You remember from growing up, kind of before you set out into the world, that Changeling society certainly has legends about this, but they're tall tales. Mm-hmm. So unfortunately, with a roll that low, you don't quite piece it together.
I think this guy is a pastor. I just assume he's probably a religious fanatic who took things too literally.
Yeah, and to be fair, although I keep repeating this is a godless land, there are still pastors and preachers like going around. It's just their society doesn't give them much weight. It feels more like someone yelling religion at you from a street corner than anything else.
It's not a land of divine intervention, as you see in other Faeruns.
Yeah, absolutely. Or even a place where people are like, there were like it's not like 2099 where people are like, there were gods, but they all left. Here it's literally just kind of like, sure. Whatever gets you through the day. It's a hard world.
As sheriff.
I also think like, I mean, this is the talk about other dimensions and other mosses. It's the worst it's doing, honestly, right now is just wasting our time. So I'm not that concerned about it.
Gotcha.
As sheriff, does Quinny know where the Tingley boys hang out?
Their actual gang hideout would be
Tingle boys.
Would be some distance away from here. I think you haven't gone looking for them, only because that would be dangerous. Perhaps you've started to in the hopes of at least knowing, and maybe that's what you guys were doing in the desert in the first place. I feel like I should modify that. You probably got a tip that there was someone matching Reggie's like
description
on the edge of town from some travelers. But no, you're not quite sure where their hideout would be. Problem with bandit gangs is they're very mobile. So where, you know, you might get a report that they were seen somewhere, but they're highly mobile. Plus, if they are indeed in league with Typhinius Industries, they might have access to stagecoaches and possibly even train lines.
All right.
I will also say, Quinny, you are familiar with Typhinius Industries and trains and industry because you actually have been in larger cities before this. So you have had a taste of the supposed civilization that's coming, that's sort of pursuing you westward. So you're aware of kind of how easy it is to get around in some of these bigger city centers. And Typhinius is like a massive industrial. They are building the train line that will connect all of Faerun. So they have vast resources and far reaching interests. And it's definitely not outside the realm that they would hire the Tingly Boys to do this.
Right. Well, we've got a couple options then. We go out to meet them, although we don't know where they are. So we could spend time trying to track them. They came here and left, so they left a trail. It's just a matter of being able to pick it up. We can prepare the town for defense, although that would mean we would need to go out and get better armaments and ammunition, things like that. So we'd have to put a plan together if we wanted to do that. We could do one and then the other, failing a smaller confrontation with them, although I assume we'll just die doing that.
Anyone see where they took off to? But sadder, you know, like there's not a lot of hope here. Like, why are you?
Hey, man, that's
what's so bad about life?
Where did we see them take off to?
So you have reports that they headed north into the hills, which makes sense because that's pretty vast, wild territory. In terms of how information is often conveyed around these parts, travelers coming through town might have rumors for you. You can also certainly, you do have some resources at your disposal in terms of townspeople. There might be traders coming through that can offer insight on such things. Quinny, you are aware that following the end of the Civil War here in Old West Faerun, a lot of decommissioned munitions are transported fairly frequently a little bit east of here along the Typhinius lines. So the Northwest Faerun line often has train loads of this sort of stuff coming. I think back in your criminal days, the possibility of robbing one of these trains was always kind of floated, but similar to like robbing a bank in a major downtown city. It's one of those like, oh, would it be great if we could do this? We'd die though. Kind of situations. So you are aware that there is a possibility of obtaining better weapons from that, but it obviously requires some risk, and you need to do some scouting. In terms of where the boys are, having disappeared into the hills, you'd likely need to find some locals, possibly trappers or hunters up in that area, who might have been able to pick up their trail.
Right. So the Typhus line carries a lot of ammunition on trains. We could try and hold up a train, you know, break the law to protect our town. I'm assuming y'all are comfortable with that.
Well, I mean, I'd rather not hurt one person to help another.
Well, these are the people that are likely getting the Typhus or the Tingler gang to raise our town to the ground. You realize that, right? Anyone who's left are people who said no to the payoff. And so now it's threatening,
true.
And they're trying to muscle us all out of town.
Oh, wait, just a second. Typhus. Oh, this is the dickhead from the space world. Okay, yeah, I don't like this guy. I don't like Typhonaeus. I'll tell you right now, definitely evil. Murdery, evil, crooked as shit. Nobody's that far off from where they were on my world, and that guy is a fucking dick. No, we can rob that train. That's cool.
I know now we can, in theory, we will die doing that. It is a suicide mission.
Well, see, here's, you guys seem to be thinking just as this town, which is important because you've had to do that. But here's the thing I know, having worked with a very capable criminal who looks a little bit like you. And he just points at Quinny and he's like,
that is, so like bone chillingly apt.
Okay, so we can set up the town to start putting things together to kind of fortify themselves for when guns arrive, and then they'll kind of be able to drive that bus once that starts. There are a lot of criminal gangs in this area, and they are not all friends. So what that means is we might be able to team up with a gang to hold up the train. And then we'll have more people. And if somebody has to die, it can be not us. You know, there's more bodies, more capabilities. Also, I mean, the Tinglys are worth, like, what, a bunch of money? It's like, we got 1,300 between these two, and how many people on that wall are Tinglys? It's probably more. I mean, how much is gold worth in this land? Like, what'll 1,000 gold get you? Is it, like, that horse or, like, a saloon?
It's Wild Westy times, so 1,000 gold would be quite a get.
We might be able to hire a gang or something to come help us fight the Tinglys when they arrive and just be like, okay, you can have all the gold from all the bounties from these dickheads when they're dead.
Law enforcement has tried to put posses together to claim the bounty on the Tingly gang. They are notorious. They are the most dangerous gang around here. They leave blood letters in towns threatening to burn them down. They give you a timeline. They're confident and they're capable. I'm saying you're not going to be able to recruit anyone with just money. As soon as they find out we're going up against the Tingly boys, they're just as likely to turn us into them.
I'm going to be honest. I'm hearing a lot of no's, and I'm not hearing a lot of scenarios where we don't all die. So what's
now
your
you're
plan?
Getting
just
it.
Die? If your plan's die, then I don't want you to be in charge anymore.
My plan is not to die.
Run away?
That
I don't know.
Is...
Can't we all just hide in the mines until they pass through? And like, oh, no one's here. And I mean, realistically, we got to rebuild this town anyways.
Well, they're going to burn the whole place to the ground.
They're going to raise the town to the ground and they're going to build a railroad.
Also, generally speaking, if people are coming to kill you, you don't want to all climb into an area that you can't get out of. Then they sit outside and shoot you.
So some things to consider from your knowledge of the area.
What are our options?
Well, no, you've identified a bunch of good ones. Basically, your big concerns are weapons, obviously, is the prime concern, as well as likely manpower. The town is fairly sparsely populated now. So going up against the Tingly gang, right now the odds, to Quinny's point, are quite bad.
Yeah.
So one option for that is recruiting a rival gang, which is absolutely a possibility. It just depends on what you can give them. The other option to keep in mind in terms of the mines, as you brought up, Moss, is the miners pretty much can't leave because the booming mine doesn't move. So they have a vested interest in helping, perhaps over and above expenditure. So the gangs you would need to recruit with a carrot of some sort. The miners might be willing to help in some way, shape, or form, whether that's providing manpower, providing just bodies to help you fight, or possibly helping create a defensible position in the mines themselves. You just have to go strike an accord with the Rock Seeker Sisters. In terms of weapons, yes, your best bet is likely to stick up a Typhoneus train line on the Northwest line. You would likely need some information about what you could get and how. A rival gang could have that, or you could try and obtain the information some other way. Those are kind of the biggest two concerns. The third being whether you... And Quinny, this is more, I think, just a specifically for you to consider piece, whether or not this is even worth it. Because Moss is definitely going to stand with the town. Butthole kind of doesn't have an option at this point other than needing greater reach to get home than just what you two can provide. Plus, generally speaking, I feel like the interdimensional grudge against both Typhus and Archibald Tingler is probably a pretty strong motivator.
I mean, also, to be honest, Butthole just can't leave a town to get stomped by criminals. It's also just fair. His moral code is like, oh, good guys need help every single time he helps.
Yeah, absolutely. So Quinny, this might also be a go along with the plan as far as you can until you see a way out.
The assessment is ongoing.
Yeah, pretty much. Cool. Okay. So as you're discussing this, you hear a bell outside, which is strange because there isn't a bell in town that you're aware of. None of you ever heard a bell in town, but there is a ringing bell.
I'll walk outside to see what's going on.
Oh, yeah, me too.
There is a cloud cover that's rolled in across the plains. Through that cloud cover, there seems to be a couple of rays of sun that have lit upon the steeple of the boarded up church. Butthole, you feel a rumbling in your guts is usually an omen of Moonhammer's blessing.
This is good. just yells.
So you step outside and you can see that there seems to be a small figure in the steeple of the church ringing the bell.
Oh, Butthole's taken off for that fucking church. He wants to meet whoever Moonhammer sent.
Quinny and Moss, are you following?
Well, I mean, this is highly unusual in an unusual situation. So
I think investigate. Do it. Quinny's got to try and plan.
Great.
Plan this out. So he'll let them do whatever they want with that. With the church.
So as they go, as Moss kind of takes off on the chair towards the church, wheels kicking up dust as is kind of like, like whenever you like motor around, it's just such a fucking dusty climate that you've got that kind of like Mad Max Fury Road thing. You watch them kind of rush off, and yeah, you've got some planning to do. As you kind of turn back to the office, you also see a kind of strange sight. There is a man in a like cotton candy pink suit, with a sort of a pork pie hat and a cane, who is knocking on the door of Jim Jim's Sarsaparilla Saloon. And he just says, pardon me, Mr. Proprietor, I would have a word if I could. And then he enters the saloon.
All right. Jim Jim was one of the people I was going to talk to anyway, so I'll go over there too, I guess.
Okay, cool. Butthole, you rushed towards the church, and you just hear a little goblin voice yelling,
"Worry not, worry not! There will be salvation for all! Garvo promises salvation for all!"
And Butthole's just going to reach over to Moss's shoulder and rest a hand there and say, oh, this is very good. This guy, mwah, chef's kiss. Okay, come on. Hello, Garvo. He'll just go into the church.
The doors are boarded up. It would seem Garvo climbed the outside. Do you crack open the doors?
Yeah, 100%.
All right, so you break the... go ahead and roll me a strength check. Because dice sometimes in this game...
That is a 15.
15. Great. So you pry off the boards and boot open the door as though you're visiting your Liana. you're hit with a musty smell. This place has clearly been disused for some time. And there's kind of like boards up over the windows, but there's still some light drifting in through the slats. And it's got that classic like drifting... sort of like dust particles and everything else drifting in the air. There's like a Final Fantasy VII style garden in front of the altar that seems to have grown just kind of up through the baseboards. Butthole, you behold a strange sigil atop the altar. It looks similar to the sigil of Moonhammer, but it's at an angle. It seems to be tilted sideways. In crossing the hammer, there seems to be a sickle And it's both familiar and vaguely strange to you. But you feel a sense of relief seeing it, even though it is dusty and unused. And you find yourself in the chapel of the Hammer and Sickle.
Well, this is nicer than I thought it would be. They destroyed my temple. All right, yeah. There's hammers. There's stuff to work with here. Garbo.
You hear
what? Garbo hears voices from downstairs. Mystical voices.
Because we're down here, Garbo. We'd like to talk with you.
Oh, they know Garvo's name. And you hear some clattering, and then a rope drops from the ceiling, and a small goblin-y figure drops down. This fellow looks vaguely like your Garvo, but kind of much hardier and more hale, almost as though he hadn't been killed and brought back to life a bunch of times and then suffered through the soul plague Well Garvo. Of Souls. He seems to be wearing a, for lack of a better term, Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat coat of religious sigils. So you see the same sort of symbol you see on the altar sort of up at the front. You see a sigil you remember from your god-killing days, from the god of gnome abs. You see some of like the big guns, and also some like darker gods that don't come up too often, like Orcus. But basically, if you're familiar with Benny from The Mummy, it seems like that kind of level of just like, I have all of the religious icons in the hopes that one of them is real. He approaches and says,
well, howdy there. It is I, Garvo of the Divine Word. And I come offering salvation, I hope.
Oh, hi. So I'm Pastor Butthole, and this is a deputy? I don't know what your
deputy.
Rank is. I'm
Deputy Moss.
Of the local constabulary. So I'm a pastor of Moonhammer. So what brings you to Tomb Slab, Garvo?
Garvo grins broadly and says,
Moonhammer, eh? I'm not familiar with that one. I will have to add it to my coat of many divine inspirations.
Garvo explains that he is a collector of religions, that in a world that seems to be bereft of divine intervention, he travels from place to place, kind of learning what he can and bringing those religions to places. And he's particularly drawn to sites of great catastrophes. As you introduce him to Moss, he goes over and shakes your dexterous, forgive me, what's that character's mm-hmm. name?
Mrs. Paisley.
Mrs. Paisley. Goes and shakes your Mrs. Paisley hand, and just like with a good degree of bedside manner is like, Garvo is very sorry for your forthcoming loss.
I'm sorry?
Oh, your town will suffer great calamity. Yes? I believe that is what the fire was suggesting.
I'm not sure I follow.
Your big building burned down.
How'd you hear
down?
About it? Like, how'd you know everything was going to go to crap? Because we're kind of in the middle of nowhere.
Like, points at his brain. He's like, Garvo has dark dreams. Garvo saw large disaster, town destroyed. So I figured I would come here and learn what I could and bring offers of salvation.
And Garvo, do all your dreams come true?
Oh, yes, very much.
Okay,
wait,
Garvo.
Much or all?
I mean, Garvo has not been able to travel to all of the places Garvo has seen, but generally speaking, Garvo saw some shit during the war, and most of that proved to be true.
So, Garvo, how does the town get destroyed? Like, could you tell us which direction the bad guys come from? Like, what they do? That kind of thing.
And Garvo...
I want play-by-play.
Garvo laughs and says, that would be very useful, but Garvo only sees the result. Flames, destruction, and one... brave, short soul standing against it all.
Interesting. Okay, so then here's the question. Do you want the destruction to happen, or would you be cool with teaming up to try to stop the destruction, to try to raise people's faith?
And Garvo laughs again and he says, "Oh, silly pastor, that is beautiful idea and world Garvo would like to live in, but town is doomed. Garvo knows cannot be stopped. Okay, but happy to help how I can, but don't get hopes up, big guy." And he like pats you on the side.
Sun sickness, does it spread or something? What is going on here?
Yeah, I've never really heard of sun sickness. I think the sheriff kind of made that up. You know, it feels like one of those catch-all terms that people put too many different illnesses under. In a future age, there will be probably some kind of book, some kind of diagnostics and statistics manual that'll break down other mental illnesses into more reasonable categories that aren't just calling everybody crazy.
Garvo thinks that would be a sound idea, but Garvo does not have sun sickness. Only known disease. Oh, that in consumption, because Wild West.
Yeah, and yeah, people get
that. Coughs in a napkin, a white napkin, and shows it to you. See, no blood. Garvo, fine.
Oh, that's good. You're going to live a long time.
Sun sickness is physical. Well, anyways, it doesn't matter.
Look, Garvo, what are you good at? Are you good at like medicine or healing or anything? Like, is there anything you can help the town with?
Yes, Garvo is not bad at that. Mostly Garvo brings spiritual tidings to people. Try and give hope for a better life beyond this one, that perhaps there are things that look out for us. You are a pastor. You must understand.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense to me. Okay, so if you want to just, like, clean up this building, that'd be great. We'll kind of leave you in charge in here.
Okay, but first, Garvo has asked for you.
Okay.
What is a moonhammer?
Dum-dums and Dice would like to welcome you to Curse, Code, and Crown, a live play Dungeons & Dragons 5th edition podcast featuring a fully original world and campaign. Curse, Code, and Crown features our regular voiceover artists and improvisers, Laura Elizabeth as Princess Gwendolyn, Tyler Hewitt as Maka Deathcap, and Ryan LaPlante as Duncan Kindano, alongside our Dungeon Master, the incredible Tom McGee. So get ready for an adventure including thrills, chills, and hope for a brighter tomorrow. It's time for Curse, Code, and Crown! Episodes are available now!
Oh man, this is going to be a good talk. So I think we'll just say we fast forward a half hour.
Yeah, I was going to say we're going to cut. I'm about to cut away to.
I was going to like, yeah, like I think I might leave.
Yeah.
Oh no, this is important for you to know too. So let me explain to both of you why Moonhammer is way better than everyone else on that coat.
And so you launch into it. Meanwhile, Sheriff Quinney, you enter. Uncle Jim Jim's Sarsaparilla Saloon. How much time have you spent in this place since you arrived?
The only place to get a drink. So every night.
Fair enough. Okay. Yeah. So you're fairly familiar. As you enter, there is a sweet scent in the air that is like oil and water to this place. This place normally smells of like, there's a particular kind of stank that only seems to exist in a certain... quality, shall we say, of pubs, where it's just like a mix of like a deep fryer that's never been cleaned, like inexplicable carpets that are somehow perma-sticky without being wet, and just that like weird stale air of like bad beer, gross fryers. I miss these places so much. I miss them so much.
I don't.
But you just open the door and it's like, boom, like it's opening the door to like a burning building and just get hit by a heat. In this case, it's just by like weird, bad pub stank. So to have a perfumed scent in this air is like really quite alarming. And it's just like a hint of lavender. It's like really nice. It's not what you're looking for when you come to the saloon. So you step through the you know, that mid-level double doors that they go flip behind you because like Wild West.
Yeah.
You look over, there is the traditional gnome pianist, just you know, wearing like the red and white striped piano player garb, who's just hammering away on a tune. Ryan, what's the song that's playing in Jim Jim's?
It's just the old McDonald Had a Farm on a Loop.
Oh god.
I shoot him.
You snap off a shot, he ducks and he's like, "Ha ha! Maybe next time, Sheriff Quinney." Anyhow, here's the little ditty I like to call "Old MacDonald Had a Farm."
And he goes back to piano playing. It's a large open space. There's like a poker table over in one corner. A lot of those like two-seater tables for characters who get out of the way when a showdown's happening in a movie. Obviously, there's like a line of stools at the bar. And then a stairwell up to the rooms upstairs, which serve as, again, the town's only kind of boarding house, as well as the only good place in town to pay for a shag. So, you know, serves multiple purposes. Behind the bar is Uncle Jim Jim himself, as you'll recall, a hardy dwarf. Of course, in this case, he is a Wild West dwarf. He doesn't have the beard. He's got big mutton chops. He's got a long curled mustache, still has a fake toe. It's not going to come up in the adventure, but just so you know, that gross toe thing is still a thing here.
Right.
He's sitting there polishing a glass, on his little step stool that gets him up to the bar level. This man is in the process of laying down a very, a beautiful and ornate velvet cloth over one of the bar stools before kind of hopping up onto it.
I'll sit down at the end of the bar and just observe. I won't interrupt.
Right. Uncle Jim Jim will slide you a sarsaparilla just kind of to keep up appearances. He kind of knows the score. You guys are pretty friendly, so he just does that naturally. He says, "Well, howdy there, fancy fellow. What can I get for you?" The man takes off his hat and takes out yet another, like he seems to have several of these velvet napkins in his pocket. He pulls another one, unfolds it, puts his hat on top of it, and he says, "I certainly don't mean to interrupt your day of business, sir. So if you feel the need to continue to serve sarsaparilla down the way, I'll fully understand. But when you have a moment, I would love to talk to you about this fine property here. You see, my name is Ambrick Valathan, and I'm here from the fine folks at Typhoneus Industries. And boy, howdy, do we have an offer for you. Now, I understand your town seems to be in a little bit of a bind. I understand that you're being troubled by ruffians and bandits. Terrible things, truly terrible. But I just want you to know that Clearwater, the new city we're building just down the way that will be connected by our glorious new train line, such an establishment would certainly be welcome. Why, I do believe it would be packed rafter to rafter by all sorts of thirsty and horny folks just in desperate need of the services such a place can provide. So I guess the question I have to ask you is, would you like to become a very rich dwarf today?" And Uncle Jim Jim kind of shoots you a look. But Quinny, you actually see what looks like shame and a bit of uncertainty in his eyes. He kind of shuffles a little bit and he says, I got some pretty serious roots put down here. But in light of everything that's been happening, he looks at you kind of apologetically. And then he looks back to Ambrick and he says, I might be time to move along. I was thinking of opening a place called the Winchester Arms, you know, just thought that'd be a nice, nice name. And, Amber says, "Well, that sounds fine, fellow. Fine indeed." He pulls up his briefcase and flicks it open. And sure enough, there are contracts and gold. And he says, "I'd be very happy to help you along the way on that right now there, fella. Must say that I feel a little uncomfortable doing business with a pair of eyes on us." And he turns to you, Quinny, and says, "Oh, you must be Sheriff Quinny."
"That's right."
"Yes, Quinny Brownbarrow."
"Yes, that's correct."
"Boy, howdy. Very nice to meet you there, Sheriff. I do apologize if I'm interrupting your sarsaparilla sipping to conduct my business here, but I do believe that me and Mr. Jim over here are in the middle of a rather, personal business deal."
"Doesn't seem terribly personal to me. Seems like you just walked in here, walked up to the counter, offered to buy the place off of them on behalf of, the rail line, wasn't it? The rail company."
"Oh, that is correct, yes."
"Yeah. Say, Jim Jim, I understand the position you're in. You didn't by any chance maybe have your opinion swayed by the fact that the Tingle Boys rode through here not too long ago, burned down the stable and then wrote in blood a threat to come back in 3 days. Did that have any impact on your decision?
Jim is doing that like awkward, like looking between his ex and his current partner thing, being like, Sheriff, this is something I've been considering for a long time. Surely I must have mentioned it in one of our evenings together here. I think it's about time. Clearwater sounds like a beautiful place. It might be time for me to pull up stakes, you know. I like Tomb Slab a lot, but might be time to get moving. Can you roll an insight check? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Go ahead with your detective skills.
So that's a 6 on the die, which means it gets bumped up to an 8 plus 2, 10.
10?
Oh, wait, no. It's for insight. So, yeah, it's just plus 2.
Yep. 10 will do it. Okay. Yeah, he is lying. There is no doubt about it. This is a man speaking under coercion. Jim has often talked about how much he hates cities and how much he generally like hates other places.
Right.
This place was built by, like, you know, his family generations back. Like, it's been a family bar forever, and he's very much looking forward to handing it off to his son, little Jim. Who mysteriously isn't here.
Mm. Say, Elbrick, wouldn't you say it's a little, I don't know, convenient for you to come into town almost immediately after an attack on the townsfolk and a threat being issued for them to get up and leave, coming in with an offer of escape, if you will, buy up their property, send them on their way. Does that seem convenient to you?
Well, you know, now that you put it that way there, champ, indeed it does. But doesn't it kind of seem like the right thing to do? I mean, if you're being threatened, that sounds awfully stressful.
Mm-hmm.
And at Clearwater, there will be no threats. We have real law folk around there, you know?
I see.
Ones who don't have secondhand badges, for instance.
Right. I'm picking up what you're putting down, by the way. And if you want to have a conversation out in the main street, we can do that.
Oh, no, I believe I've made my gun. Yep. He just sort of shrugs and says, I believe I've made myself very clear.
Perfectly clear. Now, you do realize that you're kind of already been through here and made their offers and have been outright declined by those that remain. And, you know, you picked up a couple of folks and got them to sell their properties, but everyone else who remained has refused time and time again.
Oh, that is true, Mr. Brown Barrow, Sheriff Brown Barrow, my mistake. But it would seem to me that, you know, sometimes folks just need some more time, you know? Sometimes all it takes is, I'll say, 3 days for folks to really consider their options and decide what's best for them. So all I'm doing is offering folks just another chance. I mean, after all, Sheriff Brown Barrow, don't we all just want another chance? Isn't that really at the heart of the matter for most of us?
Yeah. Yeah. Now, speaking of having time, you've got about 3 minutes to finish your drink and be on your way.
Very good. In that case, Mr. Jim, I just require your signature. Shouldn't take more than a second.
On break now. He won't be back for another 10.
And Jim kind of looks between the two of you. His mouth draws into a fine line, and he says, Sheriff, I'm afraid the nice thing about being on break is you can still sign a document. And he reaches for the pen.
Jim, what are you really going to do after this? If you don't protect and stand up for your place, your home, will you ever be able to call another place home again?
He smiles at you kind of sadly, and he says, no, Sheriff, don't believe I will. And then he signs the document. Moss.
This is so tense.
I just want to kill people, man. I just want to kill everyone. It's easy solution to all of my problems, and I haven't done it.
Seems to be a theme whenever you end up in a Winchester related in this dimension or another. Quinny's just like, fuck it, I just want to fight things now.
Yeah.
Moss and butthole. You are in the chapel of the Hammer and Sickle, and Butthole, you've just finished describing Moonhammer to Garvo, who's very, very excited. Moss, as they've been talking, I think you kind of zone out a little bit because, like, you have your own belief set. You know, you have, in the same way that Garvo has his coat, you have sort of an almost religious icon you've been carrying with you from your people. But I think you treat it more as a good luck charm than a religious icon. But at the same time, given your desire to bring light, the fact that these two folks are having a very frank conversation about religion and kind of what motivates them and how they can help people is actually kind of refreshing. Religion isn't the way you would go about it, but you understand that perhaps they're just trying to accomplish the same things you are through a vastly different means. As opposed to a lot of the preachers you've met who are just like, hi, I'd like power, please. Give me some info.
Yeah, totally.
So I would say overall, we're not going to like make flowcharts for this or anything, but I would say your trust level in Butthole has risen through this conversation. You're still annoyed that you had to sit through it, but you get a sense of you're a pretty good judge of character, and you get a sense that whatever else he may be, he has convictions in what he's describing. And mm-hmm. given that the tenets he's describing are friendship and taking care of each other and all that, like this all tracks pretty closely with you. That said, because you're not directly involved in the conversation, you've actually had some time to observe the space around you, particularly with Garvo's interjections asking for clarification on, you know, things like flatulence and whether it has to be religiously motivated or could just be, you know, anyone's. you know, those tough, hard-hitting theological questions. You notice that the sort of icon above the altar has begun to glow ever so slightly. At first, you thought it was a trick of the light. But as you look at it, you notice that it almost seems to be pulsing a little bit with just kind of a faint blue light.
Am I getting, like, does this feel ominous? Or
not ominous, but definitely strange. I mean, again, admittedly, magic does exist in this world. Yeah. So it's not like, oh my God, it's a magic, like, it's not like 2099 with like, what did you just do? It's like,
yeah. Well, given all the religious talk, I think I would have to interrupt and say, sirs, is one of you responsible for this here happening over here?
And
look at it.
Butthole, can you roll me a religion check, please?
It's a 13. I'm not great at religion.
Is that not your prime? What is your prime Moonhammer?
Religion
stat?
Is intelligence. I live in insight. Insight is my
okay,
world.
Okay, so go ahead and roll me insight then. I apologize. Right. It's been a hot religion. Second since we've.
If we want to do the same thing with the different score, that's now a 17.
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah, one. Butthole's intelligence is a negative number.
I mean, like, I'm aware. Yeah,
his challenge is he doesn't actually know anything about any religion. He just trusts his gut on Moonhammer.
Things. Yeah. Butthole, you see the sigil glowing. And again, it's not quite, I want to be abundantly clear that this is not the sigil of Moonhammer.
Yeah.
But it's similar enough. You see it glowing, but you actually find yourself kind of rising almost... almost inadvertently, like just kind of drawn by that sort of gut instinct you normally get around miracles of Moonhammer. And you begin to make your way towards the altar. I assume we'll assume that by this point you've kind of finished your tirade to Garvo,
yeah.
Who is busy like drawing the sigil of Moonhammer as you've described it and pinning it to his coat. And as you start to make your way towards the icon, you actually see that kind of at the base of it, there seems to almost be a shimmering line leading into the ground, but it seems to go further down. Like it doesn't seem to stop at your feet. It would seem to be leading underground.
Well, is there like a door of some kind, Tom? Can I see like a trap door or anything like that?
You don't see any
stairs out back?
There are stairs up, because of course there are. But no, there's no stairs down. This seems to be a very simple one-level chapel.
All right. Is there anything he could see that he could swing that would be heavy that could break the floor?
Oh, totally. There's pews.
Yeah, wooden pews. I think he's just going to take up a pew. Wait. Can I borrow that for a second? It's very close to a hammer.
What are you going to do with it?
Whatever my goddess tells me, but she's very good. Very good. Runs a good part of hell. No rattlers.
No, seriously, what are you doing with it?
I have to go through the floor because I was told to by my goddess.
Can I go through the floor?
You can follow me.
Can I break the floor? I'm going to break the floor if that's what you were doing.
This seems semantic. Sure, go ahead.
Okay. Just like
right here. And it'll just point.
I like my mall. I don't like other people touching it.
See, the fun part is you're sort of joining my religion now. Go ahead.
And I just take my big troll arm and just with the Not the axe end, with the hammer end.
Great. Can you go ahead and roll me a strength check, please?
Totally. 15.
15? Great. So raising it high above your head, you bring it down hard, and you hear a crack, another crack. Garvo's eyes kind of go wide. He goes, Garvo sees the floor collapse! And then the floor beneath you completely implodes. The three of you fall. You hit an ancient set of stone steps. And all of you kind of tumble down these steps. I think, Moss, you're likely able to stabilize yourself a bit after you like tumble a few times, just given like your big beefy arm. You're able to kind of flip the chair back up onto kind of an even keel, and to activate the stair mechanic, which is very exciting.
We haven't talked about that yet.
Laura, you want to cover it?
Yeah, I have a beacon stone. Mm-hmm. That's basically in the armrest on the right arm, and I can kind of play with it and tap it in order to like hover up and down to move up and down stairs.
Yeah, it doesn't give the chair like flight capabilities, but it's enough that it can manage stairs quite handily.
It's like a very kind of light magic.
I mean, honestly, it's like a consumer grade magic. It's like if you're gonna mass produce something, it's like this.
Pretty much
anyone can buy.
Yeah. Exactly.
And Butthole, would you just kind of let the tumble take you, or would you try and slow your descent?
I feel like he'd be surprised because he's only ever fallen in like 60 pounds worth of armor, which makes everything hurt the whole time. Like, you bounce way more than you'd otherwise think. So I think he'd just kind of let the journey take him. Moonhammer sending him down these stairs to glory.
Great. So, you kind of go tumbling, with, Garvo tumbling beside you and, Moss, at first, like tumbling behind you, and then sort of managing to right herself and instead sort of slide down behind you. As you're going head over heels, Butthole, you consistently see that glimmering blue line along the ceiling. So it clearly tracks kind of further down. The air around you is getting colder and I would argue staler. It's like going into an underground, like a cold room. You know, where you'd hide bodies. Or like keep things cold, but mostly by
cellar?
Yeah. I mean, we all watch TV, so it's body hiding. That's the only reason anyone has.
Absolutely.
It.
I've listened to enough true crime podcasts to know that's the only purpose of a cold room. But yeah, kind of like a similar vibe to a cellar. But the walls are becoming stone, which is a bit surprising given that everything else is wood. And eventually you come spilling out into a large circular room. So it's a circular room. The walls are made of natural stone. They've clearly been carved into the earth itself. However, there is stonework inlay on the ground and on the ceiling, which has been carved into kind of a small dome. Mm. There is a door at the far end of the room that is closed and has some kind of ornate markings that match the altar upstairs. And in the center of the room, there is there are two statues, sort of beautifully carved statues of two figures in a battle pose, sort of back to back. One has hammers for hands and is standing, striking a dramatic pose. And behind her is another figure with a scythe that is carved in stone. And immediately as you enter, the entire statue kind of lights up in a bluish glow. And Butthole, you notice that the man is wearing a full suit of shimmering golden armor with a carved inlay of the hammer and sickle. And Garvo says, "Oh, yes, yes, the twin gods."
Wait, they're twin. Wait. He's on repeat now, just staring at them, trying to put this together in his head. And he's like, "Now, when you say twin, so that's Moonhammer, and that's who?"
We only know them as the hammer and scythe.
Wait, so the scythe and the hammer are twins?
Yes, the twin gods.
Who's their dad?
Garvo don't know.
Fuck, I was really hoping you'd have some answers for me, Garvo. Okay, this is blowing my mind. Okay, so that's Moonhammer, if you want to know, Garvo. That's Moonhammer right there.
Okay.
And that is Moonhammer's brother. I don't have a name for that one. I have an idea of what that name might be, but I'm going to have to roll a die because I need to know whether Moonhammer thinks I'm right or not. Okay, the only thing I know is that god's name is not Sunhammer. I don't have a name yet, but I know it's not Sunhammer. There was a chance.
Oh, I thought you were going to be like, and that god's name is Ian. David. Okay.
That's amazing. And okay, so the armor that's being worn, Tom, is it like built into the statue? Is it like a suit on top of the statue?
It is a suit on top of the statue. And Garvo looks to it and looks to you and says,
Garvo's no tailor.
And then he like gestures to the jacket and nods and kind of like, Garvo's a bitch and good tailor.
Yeah, you're not a tailor.
But he says, but Garvo thinks that suit would look pretty good on you, Pastor Butthole.
Well, I think it's time that I got to try this thing on, if nobody minds. Moonhammer, this is dope. Also, very curious about your brother. We're going to talk next time we see in hell. Okay, and he'll just start taking off the suit and strapping her on.
Moss.
What is going on?
Well, my goddess sent me armor. You can see that's her on that statue. And this is apparently her brother, which is mind-boggling, but I don't know that much about her family.
And I'm Garvo!
Well... Geez, I have to get something out of this other than this armor. Is there anything else that I can see? What, did you say there was another door?
Yes, there is a door at the far end of the room.
Now, okay. Please wait. This is hugely religiously significant for me. I don't want someone to just run through. Like, I need to see it all. He's a little bit teary looking at the statues and shit. This is very important to him.
Yeah, no, I understand. So you strap on the armor and it fits perfectly. As you're putting it on, you find that there are moments when it doesn't, and then it almost feels like it's shifting to kind of fit your frame. With that...
Is there a helmet, Tom, if you don't mind me asking?
There could be. Do you want a helmet?
I'm just trying to figure out whether or not I'd stick with my green hat or whether I would switch to some kind of helmet.
Look, we're staying Wild West, so you're still going to wear the poncho and hat over the armor.
Great. Then a helmet TBD, because it's always weird when characters don't have helmets.
I don't think there is a helmet, largely because this is also ceremonial religious armor, and if they're going to pick their gods...
Space Marine Sergeant rules. I'm important. Why would I wear a helmet that would keep me
realistically,
alive?
Also, realistically, Moonhammer didn't wear a helmet, so I don't know why her brother would. You place the armor on, and you kind of like roll your shoulders a bit, and it's heavy, but you know it feels right. Rather than having the sigil of Moonhammer, of course, it does have the hammer and sickle, but you know it still feels roughly right. With that, Butthole, you gain the armor of Sunscythe. Not that you are aware that that is the name. It's going to bump your AC up by 4.
Ooh. Okay.
Holy and shit. It'll have all sorts of rules when we get to, you know, Dungeons and Dragons proper again. If you get out of this realm. If you don't, we'll come up with some rules for this realm. But you can go ahead and describe how you think this looks. Keeping in mind, it should be a it's ceremonial. It is like an idealized version of a god's armor. What does this new armor look like?
Yeah.
And sorry, the one thing I will give you is that it is gold as opposed to your traditional silver.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. I think it's a lot of like kind of traditional plate. Like I think where it gets fancy is kind of as it works up. Cause like as a lot of statues, they want your focus to be around like the head and shoulders. Mm. So like the legs are kind of more standard there, but as they come to the shoulders almost like the shoulder plates go out and almost curve to a point as though it's two kind of like scythe blades coming down. And the chest, instead of where they do the abs or like that kind of thing, it's actually a big hammer design. So it's like the handle is where the abs are. And then the pecs are just the head of like a giant warhammer with like the scythe kind of like arm things. And then the gauntlets, like one gauntlet has a big kind of inbuilt sigil of a hammer. And the other one has an inbuilt sigil of the scythe on like the right arm with the sigil of the religion at the center. Kind of like on the front of both of the like shoulder pauldrons and probably at the knees on like the suit. So it's closer entwined, like it's more metal. Like you'd probably see more joints in his mm-hmm. older plate, but this is somehow almost impossibly seamed. Mm-hmm. And like, or you're seeing like little bit, like little interwoven, like chain links in between. So it feels more solid and looks more solid than armor should for the amount he can move in it. Like gotcha. There is that bit of like, semi-magical artifice to its design that that's cool, but he's never seen replicated before.
Absolutely. As soon as that settles in, you throw
And it's got like a 6-inch like gorget around the back, because I love those raised metal collars that like stop at the side of the head just so yep. nobody can tag him in the neck from behind.
Right. As you settle into it, Garvo,
his poncho will now be a cape.
I was gonna say, Garvo very helpfully throws the poncho up and over you. You do the full Clint Eastwood bit where it's like over one shoulder, so it's still dropping down the front, but like still kind of around your neck. Places your hat atop your head and says, "There, perfect." Which is when the door gets booted open, and a dwarf wearing matching armor storms in and shoots you.
This episode of Dumb-Dumbs and Dragons features the voices of Ryan LaPlante at The Ryan LaPlante on Twitter, Tyler Hewitt at Tyler_Hewitt on Twitter, Laura Elizabeth at EL Hamstring on Twitter, and our DM Tom McGee at McGeeTD on Twitter. This episode's sound was edited and mixed by Laura Hamstra, and Dumb-Dumbs and Dragons logo is by Decapitated Markers at Decapitated Marker on Twitter. Our theme songs are And Now for That Massive Coronary and Skipping Through the Orchestra Pit Part 1 by Peter Gresser, and our ad music is No Control and Chiefs by Jazzar, J-A-H-Z-Z-A-R. All available at freemusicarchive.org. When it comes to Dum Dums and Dice, you can visit our website at dumdumdice.com. Our Twitter and Instagram are at dumdumdice and on Facebook at facebook.com/dumdumdice. But most importantly, we've got merchandise at redbubble.com/people/dumdumdice, or you can join our Patreon at patreon.com/dumdumdice. That's dumbdumdice. And tune in next week for more Dum Dums and Dragons. Dum Dums and Dice has to give a special thank you to the supreme beings of our Patreon at this time. Christian Menicola, Long Long, The Half-Blind Prophet, James Cuellar, Charles Grams, Christopher Little, Sue One, George Dolby, One True Artistry, Orion Birchfield, Lord of Bradovic, Noel Lewis, Scott Garland, Anthony Griffin, Chet Awesome Laser, Jordan Neesmith, Benjamin V, Gavin and Abby McDonald, Taryn Hefner, and Jill and Noel LaPlante. If you want your name to be added to this list, you can join our Patreon too at patreon.com/dumdumdice. Thanks to them, and a little bit of thanks to you.